Good afternoon, members of the panel. My name is Richard Podol. I represent the law firm of Burke Simpson. I will not dwell on the facts of this case, but as this court is aware, this litigation arose out of the representation by Burke Simpson of Central City in a dispute with Blackhawk. When Burke Simpson became involved in the case, the litigation had already been pending for a year, and Central City had not fared well in the federal district court. Burke Simpson came in and was asked to assume the representation of Central City on a reduced fee basis with the promise of additional compensation through a contingent fee component if a positive result was achieved. And I have tendered to the court the exact text. I've also provided a copy to counsel of the operative fee agreement. The threshold issue in this case really is, was the express contract claim asserted by Burke Simpson groundless or frivolous? That was the main claim in the case.
Let me stop you there. Didn't the trial judge only find that it was groundless? Isn't that all we have to do?
Yes.
We don't have to worry about whether it's frivolous. We just have to worry about whether the contract claim was groundless.
This is absolutely correct.
It's the trial. Their job.
Thank you, Your Honor. The trial court did find the claim was groundless, and he did not find that the contract claim was frivolous. What happened in this case was, after it had been litigated for 2.5 years, a month before trial, Central City filed a motion for summary judgment. The day of the trial, the court entertained oral argument on summary judgment and granted the motion for summary judgment. The trial court held that in order to be entitled to contingent recovery under paragraph 4 of the fee agreement, Burke Simpson had to show that through its efforts, money was specifically recovered from the Blackhawk defendants and specifically paid to Central City. 1 month later, the trial court granted the Central City's motion for attorney fees, finding that the contract claim was groundless and the alternative claims for quantum error and reformation were groundless and frivolous. We've appealed the underlying summary judgment order. Another panel of this court affirmed the summary judgment order, but also expressly found that Burke Simpson's arguments, yes, were advanced in good faith and refused to award attorney fees on that appeal. Now, there were three claims advanced in the litigation against Central City: a claim for breach of express contract, alternative claims for quantum merit, and reformation. In the order awarding attorney fees on February 17, 2008, the trial court did not address the claim specifically pled by Burke Simpson. Burke Simpson's claim was a paragraph 4D of the fee agreement, entitled it to recover 15% of the cost of constructing the Southern Access Road if its litigation efforts had forced Blackhawk to drop its years of opposition to construction of the road.
That's not what the agreement says. You're paraphrasing. The agreement,
right,
Davis says under paragraph 4D that recovery of fees, that they're entitled to it for a percentage of costs associated with building the Southern Access Road.
The judge
found there was no transfer of money, and I don't think there's any dispute among the parties that there was no transfer of money by Blackhawk to the Central City in connection with the settlement of the case.
That is correct.
Your theory, as I understand it, for the breach of contract was that at the time of the settlement, there was a secret agreement, I'll just call it that, I think you call it that actually, between the Central City and Blackhawk. Burke Simpson was cut out of the settlement negotiations, I understand that. And if you pursuant to the secret agreement, some benefit passed from Blackhawk to Central City. Judge Samard found it was speculative. There was no evidence of that, absent evidence of that. There was no, it was a groundless claim. And I don't think anybody disputes the law here that a groundless claim is one where, though it could have been a claim, if there was no evidence to support. What I'd like to know is you tell us what evidence there was to support, A, that there was a secret agreement, and more importantly, that the secret agreement involved the transfer of costs associated with building the road. What evidence was put before him that you say he failed to acknowledge?
Okay. Your Honor, first of all, the trial court's evaluation of the claim was under the claim that the trial court redefined, not under the claim asserted by Berg Simpson. The redefinition of the claim was that money had to be paid from Blackhawk to Central City in order to trigger the attorney fee, the contingent portion of the agreement. That was never Berg Simpson's theory of the case.
So your theory of the case was part one, part of Judge Richman's question, and that is that there was a secret agreement by which the benefit, by which the road or the access highway was allowed to be constructed.
Yes.
Your theory was not that somehow money had transferred between Blackhawk and Central City.
Precisely. Precisely. That was never our theory of the case.
I'm the only alumni of the original panel who heard this case. And what bothered me at that time and bothers me to this day is how is 15% of the cost of building a road any measure of the value of council services? Now, usually, I mean, you could create a fund and you get a percentage of it. And that is, it may be a controversial, it may be an outrageous measure of the value of the service, but how is 15% of the cost of building the road a valid contingency?
I think that the idea here was to come up with a measure of damages. I think it took into consideration the value to Central City of having that road.
Why doesn't it say that? Why doesn't it say we get 15% of 2 years of the value of the road, which we estimate to be 15% of the cost of its construction?
Your Honor, it could have said that.
Well, it could have, but it seems to me to be, I don't want to say that, I mean, it's almost invalid, the contingency agreement. But my second question is this. This having failed, why isn't Bert Simpson, and I realize I'm asking the wrong counsel, but I'll ask the right counsel shortly, why isn't Berg Simpson entitled to their regular fee schedule, or whatever they were charging, rather than a reduced fee, just get the full fee?
Well, you know, again,
I don't see that anywhere in the paper.
No, that is not, I don't think that was a theory that was pursued. The theory that was pursued by Berg Simpson was the parties contractually agreed to 15% as a measure. And it's not just the years of obstruction from Blackhawk. There's a civic benefit that was also in the case, a safety benefit of having the access, not having to go through the town of Blackhawk where emergency vehicles couldn't go through. This was something that was so valuable to Central City at the time that its case was in disarray in the federal litigation that all the parties agreed to it. And, you know, there's an affidavit attached as the first exhibit, I believe Exhibit A, to the opposition to the motion of attorney's fees that really fleshes this out. It explains the negotiations. It explains paragraph 9, the critical importance to Central City and the local business community of getting the Southern Access Road built. It explains the law firm's prior experience.
Let me ask you, going back, counsel, to the original questions that Judge Richman, I thought, posited, wasn't it your theory, and you agreed that it was our theory, your theory, that there was a secret agreement?
Yes.
What evidence is there to support that theory?
Okay. Again, the evidence is set forth, it's fleshed out well in this affidavit to which I'm referring, but to summarize, this case was in disarray when Berg Simpson took it over. It was before Wiley Daniel in the federal court and had been litigated for a year, and there had been some substantial setbacks. Judge Daniel was not pleased with the case. Berg Simpson came in under those circumstances and litigated for a year and rescued the pivotal claim for Central City, which was based on contract, based on an intergovernmental agreement between the parties and a prior settlement agreement that had resolved litigation between the parties. As soon as that happened, we've shown facts that negotiations were undertaken between Central City and Blackhawk, excluding Berg Simpson. Blackhawk was spending $600,000 to $700,000 a year defending the litigation. litigation. Burke Simpson was instructed without explanation to dismiss the case. When they asked why, don't worry, we'll take care of it. We're not at liberty to talk to you about the specifics of the settlement. That's what Central City's counsel told them. The case was dismissed. Years, for years, they've been trying to build this road. Within a month after the case was dismissed, all of the bonds for the road were sold, all of the impediments were gone, construction was underway, and it finished without interruption 18 months later.
So what are you suggesting, that Blackhawk provided the money for the bonds? That Blackhawk was the secret partner?
We're not even suggesting that. Whoever provided the money for the bonds, okay? Blackhawk dropped its opposition. That was the real crux of, or the trigger, and the intended trigger of this provision of this fee agreement. That if the opposition were dropped, and it's a very, very simple arrangement. The things that they did were really pretty incredible. They bought up land in the right of way. That was one way that they obstructed the construction of the road. It's, you know, I could go on and on. It's in the record of the case. But if there was another purchaser, there was another purchaser. If it was funded by Blackhawk, it was funded by Blackhawk.
You have no evidence of any of these.
Excuse me?
You don't have any evidence.
No, I do not. No.
And you wanted the court to draw an inference, or I think you actually call it a circumstantial suggestion in your brief, that these things happened. And the judge declined to do that. Now, you
correct.
The fact that this was a case for attorney's fees, and they had to only show a lack of groundless claims. The judge had the right to do that, didn't he? It doesn't matter if there were disputed facts. This is not summary judgment anyway. This is not attorney's fees.
All of the analysis the court did was, did money change hands? Every bit of analysis under the court's orders, all of them.
But even if money had changed hands, what difference does it make under this contingency fee agreement, which has nothing to do with the amount of money that Central City recovers from Blackhawk?
That's our point exactly, Your Honor. This is, the 4D is the non-monetary recovery provision. It all goes back to whether or not, because of Burke Simpson's efforts, the opposition to the road was dropped. Central City got their road. That's all this attorney fee provision was ever about.
Isn't your position, counsel, and maybe I may be overstating it, maybe you can correct me if I am overstating it, as I hear you, you're saying, no, we didn't lack evidence, it was circumstantial evidence. The fact that the judge didn't buy it doesn't mean that there wasn't evidence presented in support of it.
That's precisely right, Your Honor.
You get a chance to tell me if I'm wrong.
That's precisely right, and that's very important.
What evidence is there?
Well, Your Honor,
this chain of circumstances.
Yes, that's exactly it. There's not direct evidence. There's not direct evidence. There's this chain of circumstance, and circumstantial evidence, if accepted by a finder of fact, and you're entitled to reasonable inferences from it, is just as good as direct evidence. And to award attorney fees in a case like this, where you have this, and I would really implore the court to go back to Mr. Hirsch's affidavit. It really explains all of this in the context of the facts of the case. There was a mountain of circumstantial evidence. Whether the court accepted it, whether the court said it wasn't enough evidence, doesn't mean there wasn't evidence. Doesn't mean that there wasn't competent evidence, circumstantial evidence. There was profit in support of this claim. We thought there was.
But again, you're looking for a fund of money, are you not? In this argument?
Absolutely not. It's just
built. You're saying that Burke Simpson's work broke the back of Blackhawk in terms of
yes.
continuing to fight this, and that resulted in them running up the red white flag?
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly what we're saying.
How does that satisfy the language? Which words are satisfied, which provision of the contract?
Paragraph 4D, which is a non-monetary provision, it specifically says the foregoing contingent agreement does not apply to sums provided by verdict for settlement for building Southern Access Road. The attorney's recovery of fees obtained by settlement or verdict for costs associated in building the Southern Access Road will be subject to a flat 15% contingency to attorneys.
So it's going to keep operative term, costs associated with building the Southern Access Road?
Right. It's 15% of the cost. That was the measure. I'd better reserve 25 seconds.
So if you're saying Blackhawk's abandoning opposition, is someone equated the costs?
Yes. Yes, they were spending $600,000 to $700,000 a year in this lawsuit. The Central City's key claim survived, and yes, I don't have much time left.
No, I'm going to take care of that for you, counsel. Ask the bailiff to add 2 minutes to the appellee's argument and give appellant 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, there we go, 17 minutes.
But you're not fusible. I'm not sure I get to control all of that, but may it please the court, my honorable opponent, I'm Blaine Myrie, counsel for Central City. I also refer to them as Central City rather than City of Central. I think the key questions that Judge Richman and Judge Daly asked is, where is the evidence to support this theory? There was a reference to circumstantial evidence in favor of this theory that they had about the secret settlement and about Blackhawk agreeing to forego the interference with the road. And you referred to the affidavit of, which I'm trying to locate, the affidavit of Mr. Hirsch in connection with that. Well, the affidavit of Mr. Hirsch was number one, not submitted in support of in opposition to summary judgment. It was submitted as part of the response to the motion for attorney's fees. So number one, it's evidence submitted after the case had been decided and after the motion for attorney's fee was filed. Secondly, and the affidavit appears in two places, starting at page 1827 of the record and also at page 2155 of the record. It is rife with hearsay, and I think that's the key. We're looking at circumstantial evidence that there was some sort of secret agreement, secret meeting of the minds between Blackhawk and Central City. And the evidence in that affidavit that somehow, in theory, connects to that is Mr. Hirsch's affidavit saying, I learned from other members of the plaintiffs group, which are not identified and also are not representatives of Central City, that there was this agreement or the something to that effect. Well, I think if you look at that, that's not the type of evidence, number one, not submitted in support of summary judgment, but number two, is not the type of evidence that is sufficient to get a case past the lack of credible evidence groundless standard. This was a case where there was a contingency fee agreement negotiated between the parties. Berg Simpson, a sophisticated law firm, agreed to this hybrid agreement where it got his attorney's fees if it, it got a certain hourly rate, a reduced hourly rate, and then if there was a sum recovered, whether through verdict or settlement, they would get a proportion of that. Now you look at the fee agreement, section 4D that addresses that, and that addresses how a contingency was to be dealt with. And if you look at paragraph 4D, which is the operative page that or the section we're looking at, a proper reading of this, if you read the first sentence of that, I think it sort of defines how this provision works. A portion of plaintiff's claims for relief in their complaint against defendants requests damages associated with costs in building the Southern Access Road. So it's focused on the damage caused to Central City by the actions of Blackhawk in stopping the access road. And I think there's some point in the record that I believe it's Mayor Mativi's deposition where he talked about the damages being measured by the loss of revenue. The loss of revenue in the Central City, not the cost associated with building the road.
Did it increase the cost of the road due to delay?
I don't believe there's any evidence in the record one way or the other on that. I guess you could surmise that. But the fact of the matter is, and the affidavit of Lynette Haley, this Central City manager, bears this out, Central City received nothing in this. And the typical contingency fee agreement requires some corpus of funds that is recovered by the plaintiff and then dispersed to the plaintiff's attorney pursuant to the agreement. And
Haley's affidavit gets submitted as part of a reply brief in support of the motion something up for fees? In other words, it kind of
no, no,
response to Hirsch.
No, no, no. Ms. Haley's affidavit was submitted in support of the motion for summary judgment. It's at page 671 of the record. And so the breach of contract claim really boils down to this theory that there was a settlement agreement, secret settlement agreement, for which there's no evidence, no concrete evidence, no circumstantial evidence.
Is there any evidence of any agreement?
Well, there's evidence of agreement. There's a stipulation of dismissal, which is at page 693 of the record.
There's no writing between the cities as to what either will do, either to obtain the dismissal or after the dismissal.
Well, Your Honor, these did have to be approved by City Council. I'm not sure if those minutes are in the record. But what the stipulation of dismissal does say is that Central City shall dismiss with prejudice its claims, subject to the agreement of the defendants, that they will not seek attorney's fees, costs, or other form of sanction against the City of Central for bringing this action. So in exchange for dismissal of the case, Black Hawk and the other defendants agreed not to pursue fees and costs.
And apparently not opposed the road.
Well, that's what the argument is, but there's no evidence of that.
Well, let me ask you, mm-hmm. The string of circumstances cited by your opponent, could not they support a reasonable inference, maybe not necessarily the inference, but a reasonable inference that there had been an agreement not to oppose the building of that road?
I don't believe so. I don't believe you can reasonably infer that two municipalities can agree to this kind of secret agreement. In other words, this is the type of thing that would be in the public domain somehow. There's no evidence submitted of depositions of the Black Hawk Board of Trustee members or the Central City Council members or the anyone else that could testify, yes, there was this sort of side agreement. There's not even evidence from these alleged plaintiffs that Mr. Hirsch allegedly overheard saying while there was this secret agreement.
Did the Burke Simpson party seek to oppose these Black Hawk individuals to try to obtain some evidence? And failed to get a decision to take the depositions?
Your Honor, I would say not to my knowledge, but I'd also caveat that by saying since I wasn't involved in the trial matter, I'm not entirely certain. But there's certainly nothing that appears in the record. Right. So
would they have submitted these depositions if the Black Hawk officials had said, no, there was no agreement there? Why would they submit those depositions? Wouldn't your client have submitted those depositions?
Well, that's true, Your Honor. But it's Berg Simpson's obligation to come forward with credible evidence to support its claim.
And supposing for a second that, you know, the Black Hawk and Central City officials had denied a secret agreement. Mm-hmm. Couldn't they say, well, gee, that doesn't necessarily mean it's so. Circumstances can strongly suggest there was the agreement, contrary to your testimony. Isn't that in fact what they're trying to argue here?
I think that is what they're trying to argue here, but I think there's a limit to what is an appropriate inference to draw from the circumstantial evidence. And I would say here that the circumstantial evidence is so weak.
Can't we take judicial notice that these two cities have been fighting each other in an unseemly way for the last 20 years? Over gambling revenues, they've pulled every trick in the book, including, as I understand it, Black Hawk trying to buy small parcels of land or having their people buy small parcels of land in Central City so they can vote against the road. Now, I don't know if all that's true, but it's certainly well known.
Wouldn't
it be sort of a leap of imagination, I think Hillary Clinton called it suspending disbelief, to believe that the city of Black Hawk dropped all opposition to this road, that wasn't done in consideration of something?
Well, I think here with...
Maybe the first time in 20 years the two towns agreed on anything?
Well, that could be. But if you look at, there, that is an inference, I think, that could be drawn if there was better evidence. I mean, there's just not the quality of evidence to show that there was some sort of an agreement. I would say this is speculation and sort of conspiracy theory stuff.
Is it your position that Hirsch's affidavit is critical to this circumstantial evidence theory, and that Hirsch's affidavit doesn't contain the admissible evidence that would have supported this conspiracy theory?
It's that and it's more. Number one, it's that this affidavit wasn't even before the court on summary judgment. And, you know, if they have evidence that they bring after the fact, it doesn't change the fact that they prosecuted through the end of summary judgment a claim that didn't have this kind of evidence in it.
Is Hirsch's affidavit critical to their claim of sufficient circumstantial evidence to permit a reasonable inference?
I think it is critical, and I think that is what I think that's why Mr. Podol raised it. It is by far the most information that is available on this theory, and even then, I think it falls far short.
If there was a secret, assuming for the moment that there was a secret agreement, and in terms of which were simply that Black Hawk would suspend closing the road, does that satisfy the contingency that triggers 4D?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think.
Tell me why not. Tell us why.
Your Honor, I think any fair reading of that is that there has to be sums recovered.
Does it satisfy their theory as to whether they were entitled to a contingency fee?
I believe they would argue it satisfies theirs, but I don't believe it satisfies that theory, because I think, well, it might satisfy the theory, but I think that interpretation is so unreasonable given the language of the agreement that, and I think if you look at what the trial court found in a footnote, that their agreement or their interpretation of the agreement was unreasonable. And I think that's absolutely accurate. I don't think any fair reading of this can read this as anything other than there has to be a corpus of money recovered and received by Central City or for the benefit of Central City. These bonds were issued by a business district.
According to that footnote, then, the court should have denied the fees and or I'm trying to remember what we're doing now here, on the basis that it was frivolous, right? Not that it lacked credible evidence, but the interpretation was so far out of bounds that it was illegally unsupportable claim.
Well, I think that may be that he should have. On the other hand, the question is, was it unreasonable enough to be frivolous? You know, so lacking in to have no substantial basis in evidence or law, and maybe that he thought that he wasn't confident in that conclusion. But I think it is an unreasonable interpretation, one that's not supported by either the.
Didn't our court suggest that it wasn't so unreasonable in its prior opinion as to be a frivolous type of argument?
Well, I think the court in the previous appeal held that the appeal itself was not frivolous. So I think that sort of shows that maybe that argument wasn't frivolous. But that brings us back again to the question of, you can have a non-frivolous claim. In fact, if it gets past the motion to dismiss, it's non-frivolous. But you better be able to support it with evidence, and that was the problem here. And now on the other two claims, the claim from Quantum Merriwood and Reformation, those were found to be both substantially groundless and frivolous. And I think those were clear. The Quantum Merriwood claim, under Colorado law, the Mullins case and the Dudding case and the Elliott case require an unenforceable attorney's fee agreement before the Quantum Merriwood recovery can come into being. That didn't happen here, and there was no position taken that this was an unenforceable agreement.
That was taken care of when Mr. Hirsch testified that this was an unambiguous situation, and at that point you were able to file your summary judgment motion. Up to that point, there may be some validity, no, to the Quantum Merriwood claim? Or at least the Reformation level.
Well, I'll take each at a time. To the quantum error claim, arguably, now, even though it was found to be frivolous, I think up until that point, and this may even go into the cross-appeal issue, why Mr. Hirsch's deposition was necessary before summary judgment could be moved for. And then on the reformation claim, I think there's an issue beyond that, which is, where's the evidence of mutual mistake on behalf of Central City? And I think, again, that's a case where there simply is no evidence of mutual mistake for either.
Let me get back into the cross-appeal. Tell us what efforts were made, and not just the testimony, but what efforts were made to get the deposition of this Mayor Motivia, I think was his name. I cannot tell from the record. Was a deposition notice ever sent out before 2007?
I don't believe so. I'm not entirely sure, but I do not believe so. But Mr. Motivia at the time was living, it was known that he was living out of state.
He could have been deposed in Olympia, Washington. He had been set up for an interview, as I understand. Felt didn't show up. But there was an intervening time, a deposition notice or a subpoena was not sent to him to show up for a deposition. Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that he's in Washington is a little more excusable than if it were a deposition in Denver. To get a deposition notice in the state is, as Your Honor may well recall,
it can be done.
It's a significant cost, and
it's just a $7 million loss.
I agree, Your Honor, but I think it was a balancing of trying to do it voluntarily rather than trying to jump through all those hoops. Certainly in 2020 hindsight, they could have moved quicker on this.
I have questions with the Berg-Simpson letters. I can't quite grasp the position that Central City is taking. You say on one side there was problems of thorny issues of privilege, which I'm not sure what that all means. Mm-hmm. They also say you tried to schedule the depositions and they just were not responding to phone calls or emails. Is there any evidence in the record of documents requesting the deposition, emails, notes, and phone calls, anything in 2006 that shows this? Or just it's all we know, we just have Mr. Heiser's testimony?
I believe Mr. Heiser's testimony is key on that. Are we talking about the Berg-Simpson depositions?
I'm sorry, I meant Berg-Simpson.
The Berg-Simpson depositions, those were taken. I think the efforts began in right around the beginning of 2007 to get those scheduled.
And the judge said he should have started in 2006, I think.
Right.
So what I'm asking, is there evidence in the record that those deputies were requested in 2006 by letter, by telephone, by email, or were there deposition notices or subpoenas set when they were starting to, be non, I don't know, jerk you around. That's kind of the question.
Right. I don't believe that was in the record.
So that being the case, how can we say that Judge Sammer's findings are actually erroneous, they're clearly erroneous?
Well, I think what it is, it's not that I agree that there may have been a problem with a little bit of a delay in getting this done, but I think the other thing he did is he almost concluded that they didn't really need the depositions in order to get this done. He didn't award fees for Mayor Mativi's deposition, thus kind of concluding that deposition wasn't necessary. I think that was flat out wrong, because if Mayor Mativi had testified contrary and said, yes, there was this secret agreement, yes, there was this problem, summary judgment would have been defeated and the case would have been not substantially groundless. So I think the trial court, while I think maybe appropriately recognizing there was a problem with delay, put too much burden on filing before all the depositions were taken. So maybe you take into account the delay, but conclude that still waiting until filing after the summary, after the depositions were taken, was not unreasonable.
You have 2 minutes, sir.
Thank you.
The trial court in this case did not find that the contract claim was frivolous. It never evaluated the question of whether all of the circumstantial evidence, which I've detailed quickly here, which is in the briefs, which as Your Honor recognizes is against the backdrop of these communities fighting for years and years and years. The trial court never analyzed whether our circumstantial evidence set forth a reasonable factual basis for the claim that Berg-Simpson asserted.
Is Hirsch's affidavit critical to that analysis?
Your Honor, we attached deposition transcripts in opposition to the motion for summary judgment. Mr. Hirsch's affidavit has a more complete explanation in regard to the motion for attorney fees.
So but your, still, your position is Hirsch's deposition has the same content as the affidavit of attorney?
David Hirsch's deposition and Michael Berg's deposition were both attached in opposition to the summary judgment motion, and both made ostensibly the same explanations. It's fleshed out a little bit more in the affidavit. But the bottom line here is Berg Simpson did not prevail on its claims. This does not mean that the contract claim was not asserted without a rational basis or without evidentiary support. We would respectfully submit that it's very dangerous to adopt to have the rule be a trial court can redefine a claim that a party brings and analyze that. If you want to look at a case of contract ambiguity, any party who lost the legal fight could be subject to attorney fees where their claim had a rational basis and their theory of the case was supported by evidence. I'm going to use my last 20 seconds to briefly address quantum merit and reformation. Quantum merit had to be brought in this case. There were enforceability issues under Rule 23.3 with a law firm suing for contingent recovery, and also when you're suing a municipality and contract, there are a myriad of possible unenforceability challenges, which Central City made. Tabor Amendment, mayor didn't have authority against the city charter. The other comment I wanted to make, and I understand my red light is on here, is council suggested this had to be something in public. That's not true. The executive sessions of Central City are not open to the public. They can say what and do whatever they want in there, and there's not a record of it, and that will not meet the public eye.
One question.
Certainly.
Can you tell us whether you took depositions of the Blackhawk and Central City officials?
We took depositions of the Blackhawk, mayor of Blackhawk, the present mayor of Central City, the Mayor Mativi, who signed the documents. That's where we got the evidence of Blackhawks paying $600,000 to $700,000 a year for this litigation, for example, came from the mayor of Blackhawk.
Did you testify there was a secret agreement?
Nobody testified it was a secret agreement, Your Honor, nor would I have expected them to do. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been a secret.
Call counsel for their arguments and briefs. The case will be in force. The court will be in recess subject to call and bailiff and standards.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you. Yep. Thanks.